The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Chapter 2 in Koheles. Just a quick review of Chapter 1. Chapter 1 establishes the problem, that existential problem, that gnawing feeling inside, Hevel, Havalim, Amar, Koheles, Hevel, Havalim, Hakol, Hevel. Everything is vain, everything is futile, meaningless. Nothing has any substance whatsoever. It's just a vapor, a puff of smoke. It looks very real. I reach to grab it, embrace it. It's gone. I look at the world, and the world, the natural world, only tells me and indicates that life is a cycle, that life is a merry-go-round, that the world is just simply spinning its wheels and nothing seems to be getting anywhere. I look at history, and a generation comes and a generation goes, but the only thing that stays is the dirt. And so the first chapter is a very difficult one, but a very real one, and only a person who's ready to hear this and acknowledge this problem and recognize this as a serious problem is ready for an answer. All right? But first I've got to know the problem. The problem is that life feels so meaningless. The problem is that from the light of the sun, from the standpoint of time, from the standpoint of material light, from the light of nature, when I look at the world in that perspective, then the inevitable absurdity of life is it's all for naught. From dust to dust, a puff, it's over. And that's from the under the sun point of view. And if a person has no other light with which to examine the world, then that is the absurdity of absurdities, and yet that is the pain of pain. Chapter 2 begins to solve this problem. Okay? In fact, at the end of chapter 1, he began to solve the problem. His first solution at the end of chapter 1 was philosophy. Alright? If you look back, chapter 1, verse 15. And I said to my heart, I have grown, I have added wisdom more than anybody else. My heart has seen a lot of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave to my heart knowledge, wisdom, knowledge about folly, knowledge about insanity. I explored philosophy, psychology, sciences. But what did I realize? I tried to figure it out. I gave over to my heart to try to figure this out. From a philosophical standpoint, what's it all about? And what I realized is the more I tried to figure it out, the more frustrated I became. The more anxious, upsetting. And I realized the more wisdom, the more anger, the more knowledge, the more pain. I'm just thinking about this so much, the more I think about it, the more it pains me even more. The more I try to figure it out, the more I realize I can't figure it out. And that's where he's left in the last. He has in the beginning of a solution. And this is generally a certain pattern that people go through. I see the problem. I try to figure it out intellectually, rationally. Okay? I apply my mind, my intelligence. But now he goes for another solution. Chapter 2. Amalti ani bilibi. I said in my heart, Lecha na nescha besimcha. You know what? I'll try happiness. Try happiness. Ure'e betov. See the good. See the good times. V'ine gam hu hevel. And I realize this is also vain. L'schok amalti muhulal. To laughter I said, it's empty. Ule simcha and to happiness. Mazo oseh. What does it do? What is this solution? It's denying the problem by trying to escape the problem. Let me just have a good time. I can't figure it out. All right? I mentioned to you yesterday, I think we mentioned yesterday, Nietzsche said of himself that I am more a battlefield than a human being. Trying to figure it out. I am more a battlefield than a human being. So you know what the answer is? Go out and have a beer. Go out and relax. Play a little billiards. Go bowling. Go have fun. What do you have to think so much about? Come on. Let's go enjoy ourselves. Let's run off to the disco. Let's run off to downtown. Let's just get out of this and deny it. Now this, by the way, for me, I feel a very personal connection to, because this is really somewhat what reflects my own process. Because as you probably can see, I'm a pretty philosophical type of guy. And I was always like this. As a young kid, I was already asking these kinds of questions. So what's the meaning of life, and what is this all about, and what are we doing here, and why is there so much evil, and on and on and on and on and on. And I tried to think about it, and I tried to figure it out, but I got very down by it. I got only more angry, more confused, more pain, because the more I would try to answer the question, then the more I realized how difficult the question was to answer. And the answers were never, ever as good as the questions. And so, I had another approach. I remember one day, my father, he loved listening to this Jewish psychologist, comedian by the name of Murray Banks. The guy, he put a whole bunch of albums on. He's a comedy. Probably made the big times, you know, like Catskills and things like that. And so he used to play the Catskills. And he used to give psychological advice as a comedian. Right? And I couldn't stand this. I couldn't stand this record. My father would play it all the time, bring over friends, have them play it all the time for them. But one day, I heard something that Murray Banks said, just in passing. You know, and this is what he said. He said, it's psychologically proven that if you keep laughing, you'll never get an ulcer. And I heard that, and that made a lot of sense. Ah, that makes sense. I first tried to figure it out. I looked at the world. I saw the monotony. I saw everything going around in circles and circles. Where is it all going to? Where is it all leading to? I couldn't figure it out. It only got me upset. It only got me angered. It only pained me more. So then, if you can't answer the problem, get rid of the problem. Deny the problem. Forget the problem. Escape the problem. And therefore what I did is I took another approach, which was something I called the clown theory. The clown theory goes like this. Be funny all the time. Be funny all the time. And therefore, instead of being the Mr. Philosophy, I became Mr. Comedian. And I was able to take every situation and make it into something funny. Right? And people would say to me, oh, you know, you're never serious. You're always cracking jokes. They didn't know the secret. The secret is I was more serious than all of them. And generally the ones that's the funniest, you know, that's the clown, so to speak. You know, everybody knows the clown goes back into his room and he's really the saddest. Why is he doing this? Because he's really trying to run away from this inner voice that keeps saying, Havel, Havali, Makol, Havel, it's vain, it's futile, it's vain, it's futile. What's it all about? I can't answer the question philosophically. And so I run away from the question. And so I became hysterical. I was cracking jokes left and right. Anytime someone tried to get into a serious conversation with me, I turned that around too. And that's one approach. Another approach I had, which I thought was, I found very, very effective for a short amount of time, and that was something called rock and roll. Okay? Hard rock. That's a good thing. See, generally the voice hits you just about when you're about to fall asleep. That's a good time. When you're not on your guard, you're not asleep yet, you start to kind of think about the day and what you're doing and what's it all about. I just finished studying for an incredible exam. I'm really nervous. And then all of a sudden, just as I'm about to fall asleep, this little voice inside starts to say, what are you doing? Does this mean anything to you? I mean, do you want to be a chemist? Is that why you're studying these exams? I mean, what does it all have to do with your life anyways? And what does your life have to do with life anyways also? And then those voices would start speaking and asking those questions. And so I had a fantastic solution, right? It's called a fantastic stereo. And so I got myself one of the best of the state of the art. I've got these two speakers, one on my right side, one on my left side, and that's how I go to sleep. I put my head between these two speakers. Lahavdil, Moshe Rabbeinu would put his head between the two cherubims when he would go in to the tabernacle. There he would hear the voice of God when he put his head between these two angelic figure-like in the center of the... I put it in, plug it in. That was it. Didn't hear that voice. In fact, I still remember one album by a guy named Edgar Winters. I don't know if you know him. I'm dating myself, probably. Edgar Winters. And on the front of the album, on the bottom, you know, like on cigarettes, it'll say, like, this package of cigarettes could be hazardous to your health. Okay? So on the bottom of this album, it also had a little thing on the bottom that said, "For best results, play at full blast." And they were right. That's the best results. You know, you gotta like turn it up and turn it up. The problem is there's no end to this. Because I'm turning it up and I'm turning it up and turn it up. Because that voice, I can't drown it out forever. And so I turn it up and I turn it up. And that was another way for me to escape. And that's what a lot of people are doing. How do I escape that voice that keeps looking around and cynically saying, "Futile, futile, it's all futile"? I run. I try to drown it out. I go to rock concerts. Ah, some of these rock concerts was the bazaar of the bazaars. In fact, of course, I'm not proud of it, but I used to go. There's one particular fellow who was the craziest of the craziest, but very successful in my days. A guy named Alice Cooper. Right? A guy named Alice. I don't know if he's still around. And so Alice Cooper, this was like the beginning of a whole new era of music. Because once upon a time, when you go to a concert, what do? Guy gets up, plays a little music. Nice. Not anymore. Right? Now music has to be a circus. Now this guy has to be an acrobat. He can't just get up there and play a guitar. He has to know how to eat fire. He has to know how to do all kinds of crazy, bizarre things. Now this guy became, you know, really the beginning of punk rock and everything. So this fellow by the name of Alice Cooper was discovered, giving you a little history, discovered by another fantastic fellow by the name of Frank Zappa, whose claim to fame was the fact that he would excrete on stage. You know, pull his pants down, just blow everyone away, and just like that, and that just shocked people. Wow! Well, this guy, who himself is such a brilliant fellow, he discovers Alice Cooper playing in some, I don't know, cafe, I don't know, bar. He says, "This guy's got talent." So he really promoted Alice Cooper. What was the talent of Alice Cooper? Well, this is the way a typical concert would go. First of all, Alice would come out, and he would be singing a song with a cobra, a live cobra, around his body. Oh, that's interesting. Then after he would sing that, he'd sing a song about dead babies. All right. And then in the middle of the song, he would take out of his pocket a plastic baby doll. And then he would take out of his other pocket a hatchet. And in front of the crowd, he'd begin to hatchet to pieces this baby doll as he throws it at the audience, which I happen to have one here. I'm just joking. And then after he does that, he then takes a watermelon, okay, throws it on stage, and begins to kick it at the audience. Do you know you just paid $15 for watermelon on your face? And then after that, as a finale, his band would hang him on stage. Which made sense. Actually, they should have done that a long time ago. They would hang him on stage, okay? Take the noose, put it around his neck, and they'd be singing a song called "Love It to Death." Right? That was the song. "Love It to Death," one of his big hits. And what they would do is literally pull the floor out, and at that moment, right, perfect lighting, they'd have this piercing spotlight on his face. It would go, and that would be it. And everyone's in absolute shock. And then within seconds, the whole place goes absolutely dark, then absolutely totally light. Alice Cooper's dancing in a white tuxedo. What a fellow. The revival of the dead. Isn't that amazing? And these are bizarre experiences. It was great.
When you're in those concerts, you forget about Hevel, Hevel, Hakol, Hevel. You forget about everything. But of course, what happened to me after these concerts, I'd go out and it would be, right? But you couldn't get rid of that voice. It would be good for an hour or two. But still, you start looking at that and you start saying, Hevel, Havali, Makol, Havel. What is this not doing? Why am I subjecting myself to this kind of stuff? What am I in fact trying to do? Now, I'm not in any way suggesting that King Solomon went to rock concerts. But this is part of the answer. Part of the answer to the question, if you can't answer the question, party! That's the answer. Party! In other words, that's one solution people take. It's clearly not an ultimate solution. Just yesterday, I saw a fellow with a t-shirt with a picture of the brain. And on top of it says, waste it. Okay? And then next to the brain are little like pointers to different parts of the brain. So this part of the brain is connected to biology. And then it's rubbed off and says, party. And then this connected to the brain is chemistry. And then there's a line through it and the guy writes, party. And the whole thing is party, party, party. If you can't answer the question, party. Alright? And of course, I'm embellishing here, but basically this is what King Solomon is saying over here. That another approach, I tried to figure it out, but the more I tried to figure it out, the more angry I got, and the more pained, and the more I became aware of the question and the question. So what did I do? I tried to forget the question, which is a tremendous amount of people's time. And a tremendous amount of technology is based on how do we help people forget. Forget. And that was, you know, give me the beat, boy, and free my soul. I want to get off on your rock and roll and drift away. Just get me out of this. I don't want to deal with it. And so I said to my heart, let me go and try some just happiness. I'll just go be happy. I'll go have some fun. I don't know. Go and just see the good life. And see good. Vine gamu hevel. And I realized it's also just hevel. Why? L'schok. I was laughing. We were at a party. And then I walk away and say, nothing. Vacuum. And then, to happiness. Oh, we're having a good time. We're really happy. And then I looked at, when I went back into the recesses of my mind, went back to my bedroom, I said, eh. What's the point? What's the point? Tarti bilibi. I ventured in my heart, limshoch bayayin, to soak my flesh with wine. Now, of course, the question is this really what King Solomon did? Is he suggesting that he took to alcoholics? Okay? That he began to try and escape the problem that way? Well, I'm not sure. I don't think so. I think that King Solomon is a brilliant educator. I'm not sure if Koheles wasn't more like a rap, more like a play. And that's perhaps why his name isn't mentioned here. Because it's not Solomon speaking. It's a character that he assumed, and he called him Koheles. And he would play this character. Alright? So I'm not sure. I highly doubt that this is really what's going on in King Solomon's life himself. But then again, I can't prove it's not. Because this is what he says. He says, I went and I soaked my flesh with wine. That's what I started to do. Started to drink a little bit. It hurts. Say a drink a little bit. Hurts a little more. Drink a little more. V'libi noheg b'chachma. However, I don't want you to think that I went all the way. No, I'd have a couple martinis at night. But I would be in the day getting my PhD. I mean, I was still involved with the academia of life. It's not as if I just went off. No. I brought wine to my flesh, v'libi noheg b'chachma, v'lachoz b'sichlut, and what I would do is I would have a combination. I would, on one hand, be involved in wisdom, but I would still hold on to the sichlut, you know, a little folly, and I have a balance over here. A little party, a little academia, a little, you know, just having some crazy fun and just being a little crazy. Adesher eret. And I thought I'd just do it until I figure out what's the best way. Okay, good idea. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Get a little of this. And you're bound to get somewhere. So you balance your schedule out, some time for craziness, some time for a little drinking, of course some time for intellectual stimulation, and I'll see. Keep all my options open. Keep all the doors open. And I'll see. Asher ereh eizet tov livnei adam. I'll see which one's better. Asher yasu tachad ha-shamayim. What's best to do under this heaven? Again, it's the under. Mispar yemecha chayeyam. The few days of our lives. I don't have so long. You know? Seems long, but when I look back at it, it'll feel like it just went so fast. And I'll just try everything and somehow experiment. Higdalti ma'asai. What did I start to do also? Another thing I did in order to deal with the problem, which is that existential feeling of my nothingness and the futility of my existence and this whole existence, is what did I do? I started to increase my activities. Higdalti ma'asai. I began to increase my actions. Baniti li batim. I started building houses. Natati li kalmim. I started planting vineyards. Asiti li ganot. I started to make parks and gardens. Vinatati behem eitz kol pri. And I had every kind of fruit. I got involved with a landscape artist. And you know, I want this and I want that. I got really involved. Asiti li brechot mayim. Lashkot behem yard somech etzim. I started building pools and pools that would irrigate forests. Kaniti avadim. And then I started buying slaves. Ubene baiti ayali gam mikneh bakar. I had a big zoo. You know, I had my own private zoo. I had everything I could imagine. I also had a farm and I had cattle and sheep. Halbe ayali. I had lots. Mikol shayu lefanai b'Yerushalayim. I had everything. I had more than anybody ever had in their life. What's the solution? The next solution to the problem, which is of course not a solution, but it's another form of escape, is get busy. Get busy. Start working. Become a workaholic. Ah, I'm really involved. I'm really building. I'm really doing. Look, I'm really doing. I'm important. How do I know? Because I'm really doing. I'm always doing. People can never get me on the phone because I'm on another business meeting. I must be important. I must be valuable. How do I know? Because I'm working all the time. Because I'm so involved. Look, I'm building a house. I finished this and I'm already building another house. You know, unfortunately, I have a relative who's just like this. You know, just bought a house, spent so much time interior decorating, furniture, built a pool, everything. I mean, unbelievable. You think that's it. Before I know it, I hear, bought another house. What's wrong with that one? Too small. Too small. I mean, you only have two kids. How many rooms can you have for two kids? And by the way, the kids have everything in the house. Unbelievable what the kids have. They've got a billiard table. They've got a pinball machine. They've got one of these huge TV screens. Everything you can imagine this kid has. So I turn to this relative of mine saying, you know, this is impressive. This is unbelievable. So this is what they say to me. My kid has everything. So they'll never have to go out. You know, like in the shopping malls, David? You know, the other day there was a stabbing in the shopping mall? Well, I want you to know that I've taken everything that he could ever get out there and put it right here. So he'll never go out there. Do you know that all his friends always come over here? Are you crazy? Do you think that's how you're going to save your kid from this world? Just keep giving him more and more and this and that and this and that and this and that. And if you ask this kid, what do you want to be? He'll say, rich. That's what he says. What do you want to be? Not, I thought right away, career. I thought, what do you want to be? I thought, when I was growing up, when someone said, what do you want to be? That's a career. But no, he says, what do you want to be? Rich. That's all he wants to be. And so they think, oh, that'll make me feel good about myself because I've got a lot. I have money. Money is very valuable. Money is really respected. If I have money, then I have something, then I am something. So, again, I've got that hovel, and I'm futile, I'm worthless, what am I? Oh, so I start figuring out ways to solve the problem, not from a philosophical point of view, but from an experiential point of view. I feel good about myself. Right? I feel good about myself. Look at all that I have over here. Look at me. You know, I was speaking to a multimillionaire not so long ago. In fact, he's a billionaire. You know what he said to me? He said, I know that if I were to lose all my money, no one would give me the time of day. Isn't that a horrible thing to say? No one would even look at me. Right now, people want business meetings with me. The big politicians meet with me. He just had a meeting with Paris. After he's met with me, he was going off to meet with Paris. And he does everybody. And then he turns to me and says, I know that if I didn't have this money, I'd be nobody. So then you didn't solve your problem. Because you really know inside, that little voice inside keeps saying, I can't overcome this problem by having and having and having and having. You know, I mentioned it the other day. I was in Miami Beach, and I got together with an alumna, and, yes, one of the alumni, one of the people who did the program. So we got talking, and we went out, and I said, I needed to do some shopping, would you mind? So we went, do some shopping, buy some stuff for the kids, and she said, oh, there's a fantastic shopping mall just not so far from here, so let's go there. Okay, it's been a long time for me. We walk into the shopping mall, and I am just floored. I've never seen anything like this. It's got a circus. It's got a fountain, but a huge fountain, more like a waterfall. I mean, it's got everything, and I'm walking around. I cannot concentrate because I'm in awe. I've just never seen anything like this. You sure this is a shopping mall? What happened to, like, you walk in, you buy it, you walk out? No, it's a whole art. It's a culture. It's a subculture already. It's, you know, we go out to shop. That's what we do now. We shop. It's a whole form how you do that. So I'm like looking around and she sees that I'm pretty shocked by it. And she says to me, gee, you know, I guess I'm so used to this. What do you see? What do you see? So I turned to her and I said, you know what? I think people have forgotten what's really essential. You know, when you're in things like this, you start to think this is essential. And then we lose touch with what's really essential. At that very moment when I said that, she says, oh my gosh, look. And there was this huge sign, the essentials sale. Yeah. Can you imagine that? The essentials sale. It was a shoe sale. It was 70% off. You can't miss it. You wouldn't want to be caught dead without having these shoes. I couldn't believe it. I walked up to the guy and said, could I have one of these posters? I said, you mean one of the shoes? No, I want one of the advertisements. He thought I was nuts. And so I have this advertisement. I took it. I was so amazed that this actually, you know, I just said the essentials in that moment. The essential sale. Yeah. This is essential. I wouldn't. And so you walk around, you look at this whole thing, and the truth is that they have proven it, totally proven it, that people spend more money in these lavish, beautiful shopping malls. Now, the truth is down the street, there's a little guy, Yankee. He's got this little shmata store, and in his shmata store, he sells the same jeans. He's got the exact same jeans. But wait a second. You think I'm stupid? You think I'm going to spend half the price by him when I could pick up those same jeans in a store in a place like this? I can walk down the street proudly with a bag that says on it, The Gap? Hey, you know, that's where I buy. That I identify with that. I'm part of that. And that's incredible. They know exactly what's going on. They know that the inner voice is saying, Havel, Havaling, Havel, Havel, you're worthless, you're futile, you're nothing. So what we have to do, we have to address this problem. We have to make them feel like they're somebody. You know, if you're at our cars, you're a somebody. Yes, here, you're a somebody. Here, you're number one. Here, you're shmata. That's really what they're saying. That's what they're really saying. Here, give us your bucks. That's what they're saying. I mean, it's okay. It's fair. It's fair. Let's be real. What's really going on? I want to feel part of this because that makes me feel like I'm special, that I'm really worth something, that I'm really important. And I'm trying to solve the problem. But of course I don't solve the problem. So I'm building and I've got all these houses and palaces and I've got this and I've got that. And I can't tell you, I know people like this and it's just so sad that you see this. And they've got yachts. He says, Kanasti, he owns a lot. He thinks if he has a lot, he is a lot. But he's nobody and he's nothing. And he knows that. And that's what's so frightening. And he says, I had more than everybody. That was also, not only do I have a lot, but I can say that I had the most. I had the most. And then I started gathering in money and gold status. Sgulat melachim. Politics. I was, you know, rubbing elbows with very important people. If I'm around important people, then that must, by definition, mean that I'm also important. Okay? I had princes, ambassadors, that's my ambassador. V'tanugot b'nei adam shida v'shidaot. I had every pleasure in the world. I had yachts. I had everything. V'gadalti v'hosafti. And I grew and I increased. Mikol shayel lefanai v'yushalayim. He says it once again. I had more than everybody, so that should make you feel even better. Af chachmati amdili. And I want you to know. I don't want you to think that I became a superficial flake. No. I was still a big intellect. I would continue to go. In fact, this might even mean that he continued to study Torah. That he's not in any way saying that I only study secularly. But you know, there's two ways of studying Torah. There's a way to study Torah which is under the sun, and there's a way of studying Torah which is beyond the sun. You see, the people studying Torah for the same motivations. They feel like they're nothing, and they feel that in this society, if I say, listen, I went through all of Shas, wow, you're great. It's the same thing. It's just camouflaged in a different way. It's somewhat even more dangerous. Because you're really trying to deal with this broken ego, and you're using Torah to deal with that ego. And so he's not saying that, you know, I don't want you to think I stopped learning Torah every day. I studied Gemara. I still studied. But still, the kol asher she'alu einai, verse 10. It's incredible. Everything that my eyes asked, lo atzalti mehem, I did not refrain from them. Whatever I looked at, I took. I did not hold back in any way. Whatever I wanted, I would get. Lo maniti et libi mikol simcha, I did not hold back from my heart every form of happiness. Ki libi sameach mikol amali, because my heart was happy with all this activity. I was busy. You know, I worked in a record store when I was a teenager. And this is one of the most successful record stores in North America. So I was in this record store. It's kind of funny working at a record store. It's kind of weird how these guys come in, these kind of deadbeats, and say, hey, what album should I buy today? How can I tell you what album? Is this a good album? You know, music is so personal. So I used to advise people on music, okay? Anyways, one day, actually within about the first 2 days of my employment there, a guy comes up to me and says, oh, by the way, you should be really very careful because the boss is here. The boss is here? Now, the boss is a multi-millionaires. This guy owns not only this chain of stores, but this guy owns theaters and you name it. This guy owns it. And I said, wow, this Mr. So-and-so, huh? He's here? Yeah, yeah. I said, where? I said, you didn't see him? He's here almost all day. Yeah. What's he doing here all day? I'm not sure, he's a very busy man. I said, you didn't see him? No. Well, he's downstairs in the basement. I said, oh, yeah? No, downstairs in the basement, there's this old bum that cleans the records. That's him. That was him. This guy would come in all day long cleaning records, counting records, stacking records. I couldn't believe it. He had a t-shirt with the name of the store on it. Right? Blue jeans. And his kid. That was the funniest thing. His kid would walk in, you know, once a week for 10 minutes. The guy's driving a Rolls Royce. The kid never works at all. And the father is like a workaholic. He cannot stop. He's always working and working and working. Of course, I got to keep working. Because if I stop for one moment, you remember the little voice? Havel Havali, Hakol Havel. I can't deal with it. And so the only way is I've got to escape it. So I get preoccupied and I become very, very busy and I don't let up. I buy this, I buy that, I buy this, I like this, I'll do this, and nothing. And yet, what in the end happens? Verse 11. V'paniti ani b'chol ma'asai. Now this is very interesting how it could be translated. It could be translated, and I turned to my work, but it also could mean, paniti means I evacuated myself. Lifanot means to empty myself out. I emptied myself out into my actions that my hands did, uba'amal shamalti, in the work that I was in, lasot vihine hakol hevel ruach raus. And that's it. And I realized I totally threw myself into my business. Right? I totally threw myself into my new home, into my new car, into my new... And what did I realize? Once again, I couldn't escape. Havol havalim, the futility. Ve'en yitaron tachad ha-shemesh. You can't beat the clock. You can't beat time under the sun. I just look at it all. And there I am. I thought I'd feel good and feel fantastic about myself because I've got all of this. And yet, I felt like hevel. You know, I just threw myself into it because I can't deal with myself. And I don't feel inside I'm very valuable, so I throw myself into something else that people say, oh, that's valuable. Oh, he's really great. Very painful. Very, very painful. You know, there's a story about a fellow who, before he died, he made an agreement with another fellow to be buried with all his money. So the guy takes it. In fact, agrees. Signs on a contract. I'll bury you with all your wealth. All right. So somebody hears about it, turns to him, are you crazy? You're going to bury him with all his money? Are you really ridiculous? What a silly thing to do. He says, look, I said I'll do it. I said I will bury him with all his wealth. All right, fine. The fellow passes away, and they get to the funeral. There's no money. There's no money in the coffin. So the guy looks to the fellow who signed the contract. He says, what's going on here? I mean, where's the money? Where's the wealth? So he says, oh, takes out of his pocket a checkbook, writes the guy a check, says, takes all his money, writes him a check, says, I'm good for it. Buries the guy with a check. What does it mean? Take it with you. You can't take it. Everybody knows it. You can't take it with you. And yet there are people who've asked to be buried in their Rolls Royce. You know, in fact, I saw a cemetery in Los Angeles that says, here lies Joe and his Rolls. But he actually asked to be buried in his Rolls Royce. And so he looks at everything he has, and yet everything around him is building and growing. It's very impressive. It's very impressive. But then he looks in the mirror, and he looks inside, and he says, I'm still nothing. And so, paniti ani lirot chachma v'holulos v'sichlut. And I basically just threw myself into knowing wisdom, folly, and craziness. Ki ma ha'adam shi'avochre ha'melech et asher kfar asu. Who is a man that will come after the king, after all that has been done? Now this is a very difficult verse. Number of ways of reading this. One way of reading this is King Solomon is saying, basically, I did everything. So don't come and say, well, gee, maybe that will fulfill me. You know, he doesn't understand because he probably never did that. But he's wrong because that will give me fulfillment. I won't be able to answer the philosophical question of futility, but I will at least deal with the pain. I will overcome the pain. And so, you know, and he's wrong. He's wrong because there's something that he hasn't tried that will make you feel good about yourself. And he says, who could come after the king? Who had the potential like me to do whatever I wanted? And I did it. And there's nothing you could ever say that I left unexperienced. I experienced it all, and I'm telling you from experience, it will not solve the problem of the havel havalim. That's one way of reading it. Another way of reading it is who will come after the king after all that has been done? In other words, this is a rationalization for trying everything, which is the king, meaning God, has made it. I mean, what did God put this in the world for if it's not for us to be involved in it? You know, it's a good point. It was like in high school, where the rationalization for drugs is, listen, I mean, if it's in this world and God created it too, there must be something to it. So it's like my children, you know, we try to be health conscious. So, you know, no, not those candies. So my son looks at me and says, Abba, he's got a great question. Abba, didn't Hashem create the chocolate bar? And if Hashem created the chocolate bar, how could it be bad for us? You know, such a, you know, it's such a fantastic question. The answer is, Hashem didn't make that chocolate bar. A man by the name of Hershey, he made the chocolate bar, but not Hashem. And also, Hashem puts things in the world so you can have choices. You can have choices. But it's an interesting question. Gee, if it's there, it must be there for me to use and to abuse. Well, not really abuse, but whatever. So that's another way of reading this verse. Like, gee, you know, like if the king has already made it, how could I not have tasted and experienced it? Verse 13. Now, he's starting to look at this whole thing, figure it out. I saw that in fact, there really is an advantage, a benefit to wisdom over folly. You know, I realized that's one thing I came clear. That to just live a life of craziness, hanging out on the beach, doing nothing, you know, dancing around all day long, I realized that it really, There's no question that wisdom is much more and much better a path than folly and craziness. Right? I'd much rather see a person studying whatever it is than just hanging out and doing nothing, drinking. So he says, yeah, I see that. Kitoran or, I mean, there's a benefit to it, like the light is to the darkness. Why? Because hachacham anav berosha. A wise person, their eyes are in their head. Vaksil, but a fool walks in the darkness. V'yadati gam ani. Well, let's just deal with that for a second. He says, look, there's no question that after all my experimenting, all my experiencing, I realize that wisdom is certainly better than just having a good time and fooling around. No question. It's the difference between night and day. No doubt. And there's no question. Why? Because at least a wise person has his eyes in his head. Do you know somebody who has their eyes in their feet? What does it mean to have your eyes in your head? A person with their eyes in their head, they have foresight. A person who has eyes in their feet can only see as far as the next step. All right? So a fool doesn't have foresight. A fool just lives from day to day, from moment to moment, and has no sense of the future, what things will bring. They'll end up in a place they didn't even know that's where they were going. All right? So he says, there's no question. Wisdom is better than folly. But then he has a change of heart. Another problem. V'yadati gam ani shemikre achad yikre et kulam. And yet I knew that the same thing will happen to both of them. V'amarti ani b'libi, and I said in my heart, k'mikre aksil gam ani yikreni. And what will happen to the fool is really ultimately going to happen to me. V'lamachak makti. And so then what's the whole point of being wise? As Yoter, as it was the point of working so hard, getting my PhD, or working so difficult and trying to understand. What did he realize? You see his struggle. That's what's beautiful about the verses. The verses, he's sharing with you his inner struggle, his inner dialogue. He begins to say, well, okay, that didn't work. It just did not work, all the money and all the busyness and throwing myself into career. Didn't work. All right, and then I realize, but one thing's certain. Chachma, wisdom, is better than folly. And then he feels good about that for maybe a day. But then he realizes another thing that challenges that. But you know what? The future of the wise is the same as the future of the fool. They will both end up in the same place. Right? In Yiddish they say, in Dreher der Rhein. They will both end up dead. They will both be under the ground. And so then I start to wonder, so then what was the point? I worked so hard. Maybe. Let's see. So he says to himself, well, what's the point? If, to put it in a harsh way, if the worms are eating his body and mine at the same time, so then what's really the difference? It's a hard question. Death makes us all equal. Death makes us all equal. We start to realize that nobody becomes absolved of death. And death is that continual message of havel havali makol havel. Futile. If in the end of it all, we end up in the same place. That's why death is so shocking to people. Because I'm in the middle of, I'm feeling so full of life and energy, and then all of a sudden I hear about, gone. We try so hard to forget death. Because death is this continual message. From dust to dust. Very painful. The Gemara says a story about two rabbis who made a deal. Whichever one of us dies first, promise to come back and tell the other one how it went. What did they experience? So one, in fact, of course, dies. The other one's waiting. Hey, we made a deal. Come on, we made a deal. And in fact, that night, he comes to him in his dream. How are you? What happened? He said, I want you to know it was fantastic. It was incredible. The angel of death drew me out of my body like hair being pulled out of cream, smooth. So, oh yeah, sounds great. He said, but I want you to know, if they were to decree upon me to come back to this life and do it again, I'd never go back. Why? Because of the fear of death. See, it's not death. It's the fear of death. We live with it every moment of our lives. The fear of death is what we live with. In fact, I thought of writing a book called Living Through Death. Because the truth is, death has a message. Death challenges us. Death asks us the question of Havel Havalim so that we won't really end up in the Havel Havalim. So that our lives will not become futile. How so? By being in touch with the question and not running away from it, but truly dealing with it. Okay, and so he realized this is Havel too. This is Havel too. Now, one way of reading this is that he realized that what he was saying was futile. That's not true. Let's go on in verse 16. Ki ein zikaron l'chacham imas ksil. He realizes this is not exactly the case. This is not true. Even though all will be in Dreherderein, even though all will basically find themselves in the same dirt, but there is a difference. What's the difference? The chacham lives on. The chacham, the wise, lives on in the memory of others. Right? And therefore he said, no, ein zikaron l'chacham imaksil, it's not true. Memory of the chacham is not with the fool forever. She bishikvar hayamim abayim kol nishkach ve'ech yamut ha-chacham imaksil. He says, in the future all will be forgotten. But wait a second. How will the chacham, the wise, die with the fool? It's a very important principle in Judaism. When we speak of a tzaddik, so we say, Secher tzaddik labracha. Whenever we say a tzaddik's name who passed away, we say, may his memory be a blessing. We also have a verse that says, tzaddik be'emunato yichyeh. A tzaddik in his faith will live. What does it mean he will live? He will continue to live? Through us. Because if we learn his faith, then we live him. And he continues to live through his teachings, through his wisdom. His mind becomes part of ours. And therefore, no, it's not so true. It's not fair. Maybe body-wise, but in memory, But he then realized, how is it so? In the end, people will forget. You think people will remember you forever? No. So it's just prolonging the merry-go-rounds back into forgetting. And so in verse 17, he says something shocking. V'saniti et chayim. And so I hated life. Hated life. Now again, I think King Solomon wrote a play called Koheles. Koheles is a character. And this character gets to the point where now he's reached absolute depression. Right? I mean, this is so, what's so amazing, this is thousands of years old. You could think this is a modern psychology book. This is thousands of years old. Nothing's new under the sun. V'saniti et chayim, I hated life. Ki ra alai amaseh shenaseh tachat ha-shemesh, because I started, it's bad. It's just bad, everything that's happening under the sun. Because everything under the sun is just monotonous. It has no substance. It has nothing everlasting. Ki hakol hevel v'raos ruach, because everything is really vain. And everything is chasing after the wind. Verse 18, V'saniti ani et kol amalai, and I started to hate everything I do. I looked at my business, I hated it. I looked at my house, I hated it. I hated everything that I did. Shani amal tachat ha-shemesh. I hated my career, everything that I'm working and laboring for under the sun. Remember? She'ani chen el adam she'acharai. I should leave it for somebody after me. He starts to think, you know, there's this another common mistake that people make to overcome this problem of the futility. It's trying to live through their children. You know, well, okay, I'll build this business. But you know what? And I'll go on. Little junior. Little senior, senior, junior. Little junior, senior, junior, senior. It'll go on. And then he started realizing, what? And I'll leave everything I've done. I've worked so hard. For what reason? To leave it to somebody else? Verse 19, Umi yodeh ha-chacham yeh o-sakal. Who knows if this guy's going to be wise? Or maybe foolish. I'm working so hard, building this business, threw my entire self into it, became my very identity. And then I realize one moment, it hits me. Death is inevitable. And someone's going to have to take over this business. What guarantee? Does this business, who is my identity that will continue to live in this world, what guarantee is it that this person will be wise? Maybe this person will be a fool. I know this very case. I know somebody who did my program, very wealthy guy, built up a fantastic business, right? Decided to retire, gave it over to his son, celebrating like the 70th year of his business and everything. Wow, look where we got to. A month later, the son crashed the entire enterprise. What does the guy do? At this point, Rashi, the commentary, points out that all of a sudden, King Solomon had a vision of the future. And what did he see in the future? That his descendant will destroy the kingdom that King Solomon built. How frightening. How absolutely shocking and painful. Do you follow this? Terrible. And he realized, so then what worth it? What is it? I threw myself into this kingdom. This big kingdom would be my everlasting edifice on earth. I will live on through my business. I will live on through my kingdom. And yet, what happens is, my son drove it into the ground and dreared it rein. And therefore, mi yodeh chachamiyah, who knows, will be wise or foolish. Vishlat b'cholam alai, I'm going to entrust this guy to have dominion over all my work. Shamalti v'shachachamti tachad ha-shemesh. I realize this is also so futile to think that I will overcome death by entrusting my enterprise, which becomes my long-lasting life, in the hands of who knows who. And if it's not my son, it's my grandson. Who knows? So if I'm trying to find identity and self-worth through my business, through my enterprise, no. V'saboti ani liya'esh, verse 20, and I turned to despair. Now I'm not just hating it. Because when you hate something, at least you've got a connection to it. You know what I mean? But when you despair, you just let go. You throw your hands up. You know, you throw your hands up. Et libi al kola amal sha'amalti. And all the labor that I worked, tachat ha-shemesh, I just started to despair. Became really depressed by the whole thing. Verse 21, ki yesh adam sha'amalo b'chachma u'bedat u'bikisharon. Because there is a person who has worked with tremendous wisdom, tremendous, acute businessman, b'kisharon, or whatever this person builds, tremendous talents, u'ledam shelo amalbo, and to a person who did not work this hard, yitneno chelko, he will be given this over. Here I worked it all, for who? This guy takes it over. Gamze hevel v'ra rabba, and this is so painful. When a person realizes that in the end, they can't take it with them, and who do they know? Who is ultimately entrusted to? So who am I working for in the end? 22. Ki ma hovel adam b'chol amalo, ubarayon libo. And so what comes of a person's labors, their dreams of their hearts, that they labor so hard under the sun? So I get back to the same problem. I didn't solve anything. 23. Ki kol yamav mechoavim v'kas in yono gam b'layla. Because his whole days he was in pain, he was angry, frustrated. Even at night, lo shechav libo. Even at night he couldn't rest. So what was the point? I worked so hard, I don't even know, there's no guaranteed future of this. I was in a city in the U.S., let's put it that way. I was doing fundraising. So one of the people who did the program said they would help me through their parents, who knew somebody who was a very big philanthropic person in the community, and try and make a connection for me. Oh, wow, that'd be great. You know, it's so hard to raise money. You got connections up. So, fantastic. This person invites me to lunch. Okay, it's a woman. Of course, the woman and the man together, they were both the philanthropy, they both could write these checks. So this woman invites me to lunch. And she invites this other person and another person, so others. Four of us, and we're out to lunch. All right. So she turns to me and she says, in such an antagonizing way, she says, so Rabbi, what is it that you do? So I said, oh, well, and I started talking about what we're doing in Jewish education and the problem and going on and on. I can just kind of see her kind of her eyebrows going up and, you know. And she says, uh-huh, right. And then I take out of my briefcase a brochure that I'd worked so hard and we invested so much time and money and thought, and I give it to her. And I said, here's our, you know, our brochure. And she takes it with her two fingers. And she says, Rabbi, do you know how many hundreds of these I get every day in the mail? Right? She just took something I had so invested in and treated it like toilet paper. And I was like, hovel, hovel, hovel. You know, it was like, okay. And she's like, she doesn't want to hear anything I have to say. And then finally, she in a very dramatic way takes out her checkbook for all to see. And she says in front of everyone, I don't know why I'm doing this, but, and she writes a check and she gives it to me. Now, in fundraising, you never look at the check. You simply fold it, you put it in your pocket, and you say thank you. Right? Thank you. Of course, I was choking on the meal. You just destroyed me. I'd rather never see you again in my life. And that was a horrible, horrible experience. But you know what happened? I get a call the next day. She wants to throw a parlor meeting for me. Why? I don't understand the psychology of this person. You just treated me like dirt. You just mopped the floor with me. And now you want to invite me to your mansion and host a parlor meeting. Do I understand? Fine. So I get to this home. What a mansion. And what a spread they put out. They invited their friends and their relatives. And they had this beautiful spread. They hired a caterer. They had a special waitress. I mean, it was wow. I started thinking, my gosh, if they spent so much money on the parlor meeting, then they'll probably really give a nice check to Israelite. All right. So I get up and I'm doing this class. I'm really excited. I'm specifically excited because now I have a chance to meet the husband. Okay, he's going to hear me teach, she's going to hear me teach, but I was told that he really makes the decision, so we really have to get to him. Okay, fine. So I start teaching the class. He sits down, right? Within 50 seconds, he's up, right? In the middle of my telling over a story, he's sitting over there. Then he gets up, he sits over there. Then he gets up, he sits, and then he finally just walks out. I was broken. You know, I was looking so much forward to this. And within 5 minutes, this man has been popping around. I don't know what's going on, what's wrong with the different seats he's sitting on. This one's too hot, this one's too cold. I don't know what it is. He's gone. Right? Then he comes back, he's standing from his office looking at me. He's gone. And I said, okay, that's it. I blew it. Terrible class. Okay, what can I do? Well, after the class, a whole bunch of people came around, started talking to me, this and that. And out of nowhere, in the middle of this group talking to me, he bursts into the crowd, holding one of my brochures with a check sticking out of it. He says, Rabbi, thank you very much for that very inspirational lecture. I really appreciate that. And here, I want to make this donation to the Institute. Well, I thought, you know, it was a bit much. But, okay, fine, it was nice. He was trying to encourage his friends. Listen, I'm giving too. That's very nice. Then the conversation turned, and they started talking about the new swimming pool. And one of the people turns to him and says, I don't remember his name, Jack, how much did you pay for that swimming pool? He said, you know what? I figured it out. And I was in my office the other day, and I started figuring this out. If I swim in my pool every day for 20 minutes... I figured out that I would probably be doing about, 500 strokes. And then I figured that out, that basically this pool, stretched out over about 10 years, is going to cost me, $2 a stroke. Yeah, I was thinking about it. Isn't that interesting? I'm listening to this conversation, oh, this is not so. I mean, these are very, I just don't know what to do. I just wanted to get out of there. So the woman who had set me up in this whole situation in the first place, she was very kind. I was staying at her home, and we're driving out. We get in the car, and she turns to me, and she says, the poor man, the poor man. I said, what are you talking about? She says, look. So I look out the window of the car, and this guy walks out of his house in the dark, walks down the street in the rain without a coat. He never sleeps. He can't sit still. Didn't you see him during your entire lecture? He is so driven. He cannot rest. He is a poor man. I realized he is a poor man. And he walked down the street. It was like a madman walking, a phantom walking to nowhere in the darkness, in the middle of a storm without a coat on. He's just a poor man. So the person says, I'm working so hard. And you think, well, that'll give me pleasure. But in fact, he's frustrated by his work. He's frustrated. He's thinking about this and that and this problem, that problem, this problem. And he doesn't sleep at night. And then he realizes, and then I build this whole enterprise. And then who gets it in the end? Could drive it into the ground the next day. 24. And here comes what you've been finally waiting for. Some resolution. Ein tov be'adam. There is nothing better for a person other than sheyachol, eat, v'shata, drink, v'hara et nafsho tov, and show your soul goodness ba'amalo, in your work, in your labor. Gamzu ra'iti, and then I saw, ki miyad Elohim hi, this is a gift from God. What is the solution here? There's a number of ways of reading this verse. One way is it's part of what he's struggling with. If you're going to live that kind of life, if you're choosing an absolutely materialistic approach to identity, at least enjoy it. At least enjoy it. I mean, if that's what you're going to do, if you're just going to live under the sun, well, at least get a tan. At least get a tan. And so that's one way of reading it. I ain't tov ba'adam. There's nothing better than eat and drink and show your soul some goodness. But then I saw that that's not even in your power. And that's what's so fascinating. It's not even in my power. One way to read it. Hold on. Another way to read it is this is the resolution. The resolution is a simple life. The resolution is eat, drink. Don't eat too much, not too little. Eat, drink, enjoy your food. If you can't enjoy your food, forget it. You know what I mean? If you can't enjoy your food, you're running out. I'm going here. I'm going there. I'm zooming around. We're gonna have fun. If you can't enjoy your food, just right here, right now. So he says, eat and drink, and show your soul goodness. Show your soul a good time, not your body. Because when you show your body a good time, it's still never enough. But you show your soul goodness in the work that you do, in the work itself, in the process itself. Don't think the accomplishments are going to make you happy. They're not going to make you happy. Because there'll be another one, and another one, and another one. But it's the work. Show your soul goodness in the labor itself, in what you're involving yourself. And another way to read this is show your soul well in your labor. Use your labor as an opportunity for soul expression. Here et nafsho tov. Show good. Make a good showing of your soul. Not of your body, not of your car, not of your house. But make a good showing of your soul in this world. And if you don't do that, and then he realized, wait a second. That's something, you know. This is a philosophy of life. Eat, drink, and show your soul. Express your soul in your work. Discover your soul. Do good for your soul. And then I saw that this was from the hand of God. That this isn't even in my control to do. I mean, that's so simple, right? Have that attitude. Because then I realized in verse 25, ki mi, how do I know this is a gift from God? Ki mi yochal mi yachush chus mi men. I mean, who is the one who is eating? Who is the one that is experiencing if it is not me? If I'm the one that's eating, and if I'm the one that's experiencing, then why am I not enjoying this? And yet I'm still not enjoying this. In other words, I hear this brilliant idea, a simple message to remember, and yet I'm still stuck in this world. I can't do it. I don't understand why. I'm not enjoying myself. If you are a materialist, and you plan to just be a materialist, then just enjoy it. And yet this person says, well, I'd like to. I don't know why I'm not happy. How many people come in here and say, I've got everything. I don't know why I'm not happy. It doesn't make any sense. I'm successful. I'm this. I'm that. I don't know why I'm not happy. Well, this doesn't make any sense. You're in control of your life. It's you that's not unhappy. So just turn it on. Just switch. You know, like your channel. Now be happy. I said, how come I can't just do that? If I'm the experiencer, and I'm not happy, and I want to be happy, why can't I just turn that on? Because it's not in my control to be happy. This is a very strong thing that he's going to say. Very strong thing he's going to say. It's a gift. Why? Ki la'adam shetov lefanav. Because a person who is good before God, God will give them wisdom, understanding, and happiness. God will give you wisdom. If you remember in the last chapter, part of his solution was, I gave my heart wisdom and understanding. He realizes it's nothing you can give to yourself. It's something God gives you. It's not in your control. But what is in your control? Be good. That's it. Show your soul in goodness, through goodness. Do good. This problem is one that philosophers have dealt with. I mentioned to you the other day about Arthur Schopenhauer and the whole feeling man will never be happy, never be satisfied, and therefore the answer is be here now. Get out of the game. Stop striving after the wind. Don't put your life into futures-oriented things, because who knows, there's no guarantee of the future, there's no real security, and all those things that people call securities. Right? And be here now. That's not what Judaism is saying. Judaism is saying, do good here now. Do good here now. Don't think that accomplishments will make you happy. But the action of doing good here now. Solomon has a horrible, horrible vision. He's worked so hard to build his kingdom, and yet his son will destroy it, or one of his descendants will destroy it. So what's the worth of it? The worth was the act itself. My responsibility is to build the Beis Hamikdash. If it'll get destroyed, none of my business. Okay? I have to do good now. And what will come of it is not my business. I've got to do good now. And if I do good now, then that will make me receptive to the gifts of God, wisdom and understanding and happiness. In other words, to pursue happiness is to lose happiness. And the more you make it your business, I want to be happy, I want to be happy, I want to be happy, the more miserable you'll become. The more you pursue happiness, the more it runs away from you. It's like a butterfly. You try and catch it, it runs away. But what should you pursue? Goodness. That's what Judaism says. That's in your control. That you can do. You're saying, well, why can't I just turn it on, turn it off? I like to be happy. I just turn it on. It's a gift. Happiness, an attitude of such life. He realized that his realization was a gift itself. He realized that this attitude of living, eating simply, drinking, and showing your soul goodness, that itself is an attitude. But then he realized, but wait a second, why am I still not happy? He said, of course, because it comes from God. If I'm the experiencer, then I should be able to turn it on right now. I want to be happy. Why not? Boo. I want to lift my hand. I do it. I want to eat. I do it. I want to be happy. I do it. Why can't I do it? It's really not in my control to be happy. It's in my control to be good. And if I will be good, then this attitude God will give me. God will give me happiness. But I have to stop pursuing it. I have to stop being so fixated on being happy. I have to work on being good. And therefore, a person who is good before God, he will give wisdom, understanding, and happiness. And to the sinner, he will give this matter of hoarding only to give it to the one that is good later on. In other words, he's saying something that's absolutely amazing. Do you know what the punishment of a sinner is? The attitude of the sinner. The punishment of the sinner is that God will continue to give you this attitude that I'm going to feel good about myself by hoarding and having and building and this and that, only to break down in my own way and realize I'm still not happy. I'm still not fulfilled. I still don't feel meaningful. And I go and I go and I go, and yet at night it still hits me. And I run and I run. That's its own punishment. And that's what we talked about the other day. Sin, so to speak, is its own punishment. The attitude that a person has, this false way of trying to feel significance in my life is its own torture, self-torture. And therefore, in the end, what's even more amazing is I work so hard, I won't even be happy, and in the end, it will be given to the one who is good. And this is symbolized in the story of Purim, whereby Haman is this wicked man, and in the end, everything that he worked for ended up becoming the property of Mordechai. And so in the end, the good, so to speak. And so this is a beginning of a glimmer of light. How to deal with this? Part of the solution. The solution is not a philosophical one. The solution is certainly not to deny the problem, to run away from the problem, to create all kinds of false images of importance. And it's not by trying to build something that I think will last in the future forever and ever and ever. And it's not through trying to continue to live through my children. It's like people think that it's through their children they have immortality. And you know, that's why there are parents that try to control their children's lives so much. I want you to be a doctor. You know why they want you to be a doctor? Because they wanted to be a doctor. I think very often, not always, but sometimes that could be the scenario. That they want to continue to live on through you. They feel lacking in their life, and they're looking for their fulfillment in you. I'm not saying all parents are like this, chas v'shalom. But when you do for your children, then you should do it out of generosity. You should do it as an act of goodness, not as an act of trying to deal with your problem of this inner self-respect and trying to figure out how to live on and overcome death through them. And make your children the extension of yourself, and you'll live on through them, and therefore you want them to become who you are, and fashion their life in the dream of what you didn't fulfill in your life. Can't do that to your children. And so there are all these ways of trying to deny the problem, escape the problem, solve it in ways that are really not ultimately effective by trying to be immortal in this world. And he comes to a solution. The solution is do good. Do good. Right here. Right now. The future? I don't know. That shouldn't be the source of what makes this important. Right now, there's something my soul has to do, and it has to be good. What do you mean by good? Good question. Good question. Well, no surprise, Judaism defines good by performing the will of God. And that a person needs to know the will of God. Judaism claims that it has the revealed word of God. What God wants us to do in this world.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.